Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Tom Benedek, and I am speaking with Michael Tolkien, the screenwriter of many films and several novels, the writer and screenwriter and author of The Player, among other things. What's your most recent novel, Michael?
The Return of the Player.
Okay.
And I think several is three. I think after three you can say four novels or... after seven novels, you can say many novels, or maybe you can say seven novels, and after 12, you can say many novels. So I don't know, several plus one.
Okay, all right, very good, very good. And you were a screenwriter for many years exclusively, and then you started writing novels, or you?
No, actually, I shouldn't be speaking over you. No. This is no crosstalk. I'll try not to interrupt. No, I actually. Let's say it quickly. I started working on the novel of The Player probably about 1982 or 83, and then maybe wrote about 15 pages, put them in a file, and forgot about them. Then about a year and a half, and that was on a typewriter. That was before I got my first K-Pro. Then remember the K-Pro?
Yes, I do. The writer's story. You must have gotten it.
The writer's story, the K-Pro. The K-Pro was, it was an old, some people won't remember this. It was an old computer on a different system, different software than they've got now. Microsoft is the one that won. And you would hit save and then you could go make a sandwich. And you were like, and it could hold like a whole, 30-page file, and it would take a minute and a half to scroll from the top to the bottom. Anyway, so I wrote a screenplay called Gleaming the Cube and sold it in 1985, and then that bought me about a year, and I finished The Player. I had sort of forgotten about it, and then I opened up my files one day, and I saw this 15 pages that were pretty good, and then typed them into the computer by that point, and then didn't stop that year, and then sold it. Then I wrote The Rapture, which Nick Wexler read and helped me turn into a feature that I directed. And after The Player, I wrote a novel called while we were shooting the movie The Player, I wrote a novel called Among the Dead. Then about 4 years later, I wrote a novel called Under Radar. And then about another 5 years after that, I wrote The Return of the Player, and I'm now working on my fifth novel.
And in
between all that time, I directed two movies and wrote a bunch of films that got made, some that didn't, did rewrites on movies for which I got credit a couple of times and didn't get credit a few times. And here we are today.
All right. Well, that's a great history. And here I am with my first novel, which is about to come out, Peloponnesia, which is about a screenwriter and a screenplay and a producer's rather specific relationship to that screenplay.
Wow.
I love the form. It's my first time writing a novel, and there are things about it that are just superior to writing screenplays, I would say. How do you weigh the difference between the two? How does it feel to you?
It's always a good question, and I often have a different answer. But I think that the big difference is that the screenplay, the novel, is maybe the last place in Western culture where the writer and his audience have the most freedom. And by that I mean that, it's the only form of art that everybody takes at their own speed. You look at a painting, you're looking at the painting, you can spend more time in front of a painting, but the painting doesn't change, and you're not controlling the speed at which you look at the painting. You listen to a piece of music, you're not controlling the speed at which you're listening to a piece of music. I mean, you've got the pause button on TV, obviously, but that's a corruption. That's not it's not the same thing as, and yet when you're actually watching the scene, it's moving at the scene that it was created in. So with that freedom, you've also got the freedom to go back. sometimes the writer really forces you to go back, because you can only understand a paragraph sometimes by rereading it. If you pick a book up and you know it's normal, you pick a book up after you haven't read it for a few days, you have to go back. So there's this way in which you are really dancing with the author. Also, since obviously books have a commercial aim, some of them, and some writers are more commercial than others. A book can be completely successful on its own terms, separate from its commercial success in the marketplace.
That's very true, and the filters aren't there. I mean, I gave a review copy to a friend of mine yesterday, and there's the sensation of giving it to him. I knew everything that was in that package that it contained the entire vision of what I had done, and he had it in his hands, and he could receive it completely on his own terms, in his own time. But there would be no intermediary. There would be no other, no transmission device of any kind, and that's very different from most other forms. So different from the film form, to put it mildly. But so when you have an idea, I mean, do you ever think of, you weigh out, oh, this should be a movie or this should be a novel, have you written original script much since you started writing novels?
I don't know. Oh, no, I haven't written that many original. Well, actually, I have written original scripts that haven't been. I don't want to think about how many I've written that haven't been made. So I can't. Probably. I mean, complete spec scripts that haven't been.
Just spec scripts.
Spec scripts that haven't made. I'm not sure. Whereas I have no unpublished manuscripts of novels. Every book I wrote, I sold, and I didn't take any advances on them. I just wrote them and sold them. What's the question? Where were we?
And so that feels.
How do I know which one I'm going to do?
So you have an idea for a story. There's more freedom in a way if you know that the path is clear. If you can bat 1,000 on getting them into print and getting them into the marketplace or getting them into readers' hands and into people's minds, that's superior to the film form, wherein there's so many intermediaries and so many filters and things can just end up not being finalized in any way.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, this question comes up sometimes, and you know, how do you know the difference? Well, you know, if I'd written 30 novels, you know, and 20 movies, I mean, if I had a larger output on either side, maybe I'd have a theory, but I guess for me, each book has begun with a kind of, I don't know, an awareness that this is a book. With my first book, with The Player, I had been reading a lot of Patricia Highsmith, who was still alive at the time, and gave me a terrific blurb for the book when it came out. And also a lot of James M. Cain, and somehow I adopted them as my literary mother and father, because I think they saw, particularly Highsmith, solved a problem I was having, create a problem I was having as a writer. There was a way she showed how to write something that was almost like first person, even though it was third person, and that fit something that allowed me to do something that I had never been able to do before. And then my second novel, Among the Dead, which is about the consequences of a plane crash, started actually as an idea for a TV movie. About someone who misses someone is late for a plane and his family's on and the plane crashes,
You pitched it as a TV movie.
No, I'm not sure if I pitched it. I really don't. I mean, maybe I pitched it a couple of times, and you know, maybe the executives I pitched it to thought it was too depressing. Whatever happened, I've really forgotten. I then went to work and wrote the book. And which I think is probably the best thing I've ever done. And then for Under Radar, we were on a family trip to Jamaica, and I saw something I was unhappy at the hotel where we were staying, kind of a family resort. And the few things happened there, and I turned that into a story about someone who commits a very public murder at a tourist site, knowing that he's going to be caught, knowing that there's no way he's not going to pay for this murder, and he commits the murder anyway, and then follows him. And then with the return of the player, what?
Can I ask you a question about that?
Yeah.
The kernel of the idea that you had, you saw something happen, or you experienced something, and then a day later or a week later, you ruminated with that, and at some point it enlarged into something that you thought was, you know, that became this.
I think it happened very quickly.
Novel.
Yeah, novel. I think this happened very quickly. And I you know, it's possible that, I think if I had, excuse me, this may get a little bit fuzzy for a second while I go into this room and get my tea. The miracles of television. All right, so I it's a really nice white tea. I recommend it to all of you. So I think with if those four novels, which I'm proud of, if those four novels had been movies with the same intensity that they're books, they would have had a very different response. I think they would have gotten much more of a response than they did as books. Although all of them were translated. I mean, I've been
you
lucky
mean, so
about
more
that.
People would know, more people would have awareness of them, and people would, you know, if you mentioned them, people would say, "Oh yeah, I saw that." And
yeah, exactly. I mean, they would be even if they were independent movies, which I think they're sort of independent novels rather than thriller novels. But even if they were independent movies, they would be better. They would be remembered.
So that whole
in the way that the New Age and the Rapture movies I made about 20 years ago, people they're still referenced movies. So,
and how does that feel different for you? I mean, it's sort of like in cocktail parties.
Well, what it feels different. The difference
people,
is.
And they know, you know, they've heard of something you've done. It sort of proves this is who I am. Your identity becomes fixed in their mind in a greater way.
Right.
But
here's how it
feels. The work itself, how do those things measure up?
Say that. I asked the question again. It was a little hard to understand.
Okay. There's this idea. There's this thing about movies and screenplays where people will say, "Have you done anything that I've heard of?" If they don't already know you. And then you talk about, I did Cocoon. So then I exist in their mind as someone who is really what I said I was. Whereas, but if I also did something which I think is a novel, which they haven't heard of, which actually has more significance to me personally, emotionally, which has more, there's more to it of me in there ultimately for them to experience, what do I care, or what do I really want, or where am I, you know, how do you measure those? How do you reconcile that paradox, so to speak?
I think there's a few ways of dealing with it. One is, for example, I've written four novels. It sounds like you've never read one of them, and I haven't read your book because it's not out yet. But I think with the return of the player, I was really.
I read the player.
I shouldn't have been surprised when the. Well, maybe I was. I was a little surprised when the return of the player came out that almost nobody in Hollywood read it, and it got reviewed in both the LA and New York Times, and there was a little bit of promotion for it, and we sent it out, and nobody I'm really amazed that nobody read it. Also, you find out as a novelist that, most of your friends don't read your books, but then I've got friends who are novelists and I haven't read everything they've written, so it's sort of quid pro quo. But I think, there are these cliches, which may also be, they're cliches or they may actually be wisdom, which is that, one of the Indian texts says, I guess the Bhagavad Gita says, you're entitled to your labor, but not the fruits of your labor, something like that, which fits a caste system. But it means creatively, you do your work. You do the best you can on your work, and you do it as honestly and and I sound like Hemingway in Midnight in Paris. You do it honestly. You do it truly, truly good, honestly. The work must be true. If the work is true and you're not true, then the work, you know, then you make money, but you're a fraud. You know, you do your best, and then you cast it out into the world, and it catches fire or it doesn't. I think waiting for posterity, or sort of having the vanity that posterity will reward you, is real kind of vanity. And I think that's not, first of all, I think posterity is probably dead. I think we're the last generation. I think roughly the period that we're living in right now is probably the last epoch for which previous generations have a hope of living in posterity.
Wow. You think the world is coming to an end?
Well, what I mean is that Dickens is in no danger, or in little danger, of being completely forgotten. Although maybe in 200 years it'll be too dense, but someone will always be reading him. I'm not sure that anybody writing today, let's say Philip Roth, who I think is the best writer best living writer in America. And I don't know that they'll be reading Philip Roth, that his name will glow in 100 years the way the names from the 19th century still glow. While in 100 years, the names from the 19th century, the names from the 19th century will still glow 100 years from now. I don't think the names from the 20th century will 20th century will grow 100 years. Will glow 100 years from now.
Because other mediums will reflect the time better.
No. Well, that's a good question. No, because I don't think. Well, I think they'll be watching I Love Lucy 100 years from now. I think that'll still work. I'm not so sure. Well, we'll see whether. I mean, I think some comedies will work 100 years from now. People will watch them, you know, and although there's going to be so much of recorded storytelling that will always be available. It's not going to be deleted. It'll just be in a subfolder, you know, foreign film, you know, foreign horror slasher film, like on the way Netflix categorizes everything. Those categories will always be there, but they may be folded into, you know, early 21st, you know, 20th century horror, 21st century horror, or broken down by decade. And I think there's just going to be so much. But if you take, or another way is to look at things now. When I was, let's say, anybody who was born mid-century and was growing up watching television, you know, there weren't that many stations, and so we had a working knowledge of the history of movies that went back to the early 1930s, to the beginning of sound, up through the mid-1960s. Everybody knew who Jimmy Cagney was. Up through 1975, people knew who Jimmy Cagney was. And nobody under 25 knows who Jimmy Cagney is anymore. Jimmy Cagney is finished, and he'll never come back. Cary Grant is known. John Wayne is known. But Jimmy Cagney's not. And I suspect that they'll continue to fade and be drowned. And I think that movies that were made, movies that were considered really important in their time, even as recently as the early 1990s, are already gone. And that, whereas, you know, in the 1960s, there were a lot of movies being watched that were 30 and 40 years old. And right now, there are not a lot of movies being watched that are 30 and 40 years old, because there's so much and so much that's available. And so easily seen.
And what is, in terms of process, how does that affect process? How does that, why do we write? Are we writing for the future, to record these moments for people 100 years, or are we writing to mark our own time? And because
you're writing because you have to. You're writing because you have to. You're not writing
If we have to write, then what part of that is this process of wanting it to be marked out in the world and wanting to be heard or read? I mean, how does that measure into it?
I'm looking for a quote from William James that will answer this question. Let me find it. The more I work, I guess I just feel like I don't know. I can't answer those questions, some of those larger questions that I thought I used to have answers for. I really don't know if I can answer them anymore. Why we write? Is that the basic question?
No, the question is, I like to think that we're working on narratives to form ourselves or to define ourselves or define to express these components of how we feel and who we are in our true sensibility. Just keep doing that over and over again, filtered through these different stories, and that process is more significant than the end than the result or than the reflection we receive from it. But when people read my book and they tell me, you know, I really related to this and I love the story and it was, you know, they find it entertaining and they find it illuminating, that matters to me. It matters to, you know, that it was well wrought for them. That makes a difference.
All right. So Henry James, writing about Hawthorne, said, "There are 1,000 ways of enjoying life, and that of the artist is one of the most innocent. But for all that, it connects itself with the idea of pleasure. He proposes to give pleasure, and to give it, he must first get it. Where he gets it will depend upon circumstances." So, and then there's that, you know, what other thing about the madness of art? Let me see if I can find that one.
Okay, so giving pleasure as well as getting it. So if we don't, so then it to some extent, if it's not that shared experience, then it's not complete, I guess.
Yeah, you've got to register. It has to go to market. I believe that. I think that once it goes to market, you're free. So an unpublished, something that's not published is not finished. A painting that's not sold, or an artist whose paintings don't sell, I don't think is finished. I think it's really important. It's a kind of synaptic connection. Once you've sold your first ticket to a movie, once you've sold your first copy of a book, it's gone. It's done. And I think that there's something cosmic operating at that. But the marketplace...
Yeah.
It's not so much the reception; it's just the actual purchase.
Mm-hmm. And
that
mass,
frees you.
Then the other issue is today is mass media versus what they call the long tail. I mean, if books, for the most part, are part of the long tail. They're part of the media, but they're not particularly mass necessarily, unless you're a certain kind of writer or books that
I don't know. This long tail business, the long tail, I either think of a brontosaurus, which is really stupid, or Satan.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about process a little bit. When you write, you know, you have a kernel of an idea. Do you outline or do you write, you know, how much structuring do you do before you start writing?
I don't know. It's fine. I just had this conversation with someone a while ago. He was talking about George R.R. Martin, who... in his books, just writes and then kind of, you know, has to write, you know, keeps planting, what he says, he just keeps planting seeds and he keeps writing and then he has to go back and, you know, sort of follow some of the threads because he wrote himself into challenging confinement. I make a lot of notes. I ask myself, I do something where I'll make notes by asking myself questions. I sort of interrogate myself. I write the question and then I write my answer. Just what, you know, thematic questions, character questions. You know, sometimes like if you're writing in TV, they require outlines. You know, pilots that I've written, you know, require very dense outlines before you sit down and write a word of dialogue. I find sometimes having the characters talk to each other, even if it's not exactly what the, you know, will go into the scene. But, you know, I mean, with the computer, I keep, you know, I keep my working file, and then I keep sketch files, you know, where I, like, it's like a, you know, an artist, a painter, you know, making charcoal sketches on a pad to get an idea of what he wants to do before he touches the canvas. And I do a lot of that.
Screenplays and in television writing, a structure, people say structure is everything. You might have a great structure and not even execute the script that well, and it'll still work as a screenplay or a teleplay. But in, so that you can work, you, there's a mandate to work that way. There's a mandate by process of the business, unless you're writing a spec. And or even with a spec, if you end up in the collaborative process of making a film, you end up working on structure and dealing with structure a lot of the time. But in, with a novel, you don't have to do that. So you don't do that? I mean, do you write
lines? Of course
you
do. But a novel has, I mean, I've written, since my first novel, I've been a member of the International Association of Crime Writers. All of my books have had a murder in them. And whether or not they're strictly crime novels, all of them have a murder, and all of them have had police investigation in different, you know, foreground or background. And all of them have had someone who's feels very guilty, whether the person was among the dead. The person who's the most, who walks around with the most guilt is the person who's completely innocent although he's wildly embarrassed because something of his that's discovered in the wreckage of the plane. A letter that he wrote to his wife is found in the wreckage of the plane that embarrasses him. But he's innocent of anything. But he becomes sort of the target of most of the people in the book. I don't know. I don't know how to answer that question.
Okay, but you feel like you're a genre writer. I mean, you feel like you're a crime writer. It seems like you sort of really are hedging between.
Okay, you're
like,
talking about genre. Okay. Well, I think genre. I think everything's genre, but people forget that. And I think that the literary novel is a genre in itself. Psychological. What is it? It's Ballard. Let me see if I can find my Ballard quote. Hang on 1 second. Okay, so Ballard says, he's talking about science fiction, few literatures would seem better equipped to deal with their subject matter than science fiction. No other form of fiction has the vocabulary of ideas and images to deal with the present, let alone the future. The dominant characteristic of the modern mainstream novel, and this is why I think of it as a genre, is its sense of individual isolation, its mood of introspection and alienation, a state of mind always assumed to be the hallmark of the 20th century consciousness. And then he goes on to say that's actually into the 19th century consciousness because of a reaction against the masses sustained in bourgeois society. So the novel, say the New Yorker novel, let's say, Jonathan Franzen is a great writer, and his novels are really brilliant, but they're 19th century novels. They're not 21st century novels. And they don't have the insanity of the best 21st century writing or the late 20th century writing. And I would say, I mean, I think there's a certain kind of pornographic similarity between in a lot of genre fiction, you know, almost all scan. I mean, there's a lot of good Scandinavian crime fiction, but it's all basically the same. And I think so. People sort of grab onto the familiarity of that, the way they grab onto the sort of look for the familiarity in porn. Whereas science fiction has some tropes, but I think the science fiction is, because I'm reading, sort of exploring science fiction right now. Science fiction is a vast universe of possibilities. And it's not always the same thing.
I agree that in genre writing there's many different things going on, and there's a lot of freedom in all different niches. And I was trying to look at where my book is in genre, and I guess it's sort of 21st century literature, for lack of anything else, because there's no murder in it, and no, people are crazy, and they do have sex, so let's, maybe it is of the moment in some way. Let's talk about Hollywood today. You're setting up a script right now, or setting up one of your books to direct?
Hopefully, yeah. Setting up, actually both. I've got a book that's being considered for publication and a script that's being considered for production.
And you've been in the game pretty much over the same period of time as I have, and I think
right.
You really changed. I mean, it was the golden age of the original screenplay when I came in, and you wrote a script, and there were many gifted directors, and there were lists of stars who were interested in doing different kinds of movies. And
you know, I got caught in the fight between Jack. I got caught in a fight between Jack Warner and Spencer Tracy once, and I can't even begin to tell you what that was like. And I miss those days. I think you worked with David Brown, right?
Yeah, I worked with Zadig and Brown.
Right, so David, who was one of the producers of The Player, and actually the one who read it in galleys and called me, and David said...
I gave him my manuscript for Peloponnesia, and he tried. He said, I want to make this into a movie, and he tried for a year to set it up, and he couldn't set it up. So, I wish he had been as successful with mine as he was with yours.
Right. So, but he said, Hollywood is always the same. It hasn't changed. And I would say, and he passed away a couple of years ago. I would say that he would probably have changed his mind in the last couple of years, because, and I think it changed. The computer has eaten everything. It's eating Hollywood, and I think the big change, and the one that's galloping, is the change in distribution and the breakdown. It's just the change in distribution, and I think that there's something in the change in distribution which is changing the movies. It's like Netflix. I don't know that the standalone movie, I'm not sure how. There's always going to be movies, but Netflix is as things move to TV, as they gravitate to television, it seems like the better investment is not in an individual movie, but in something that in a 12 episode arc. That the cable series is really the model for where things are the most potentially the most commercial, and I think that where the real novel has gravitated, the traditional novel has gravitated is to the 12 episode series. That's where the 19th century novel has gone.
And that's what most people hunger. You're talking about sort of a Mad Men in the American model, though. 12 episodes is not enough. In British series they'll do a 6 episode or maybe a 12 episode, but in this country they end up having to push it to as many seasons as are commercially viable, whether or not there's
right.
creative force is really there. And most of the time the principals will go along with it, and they'll try and make
right,
it work.
Right, but the satisfaction of dipping yourself in, of lowering yourself into a or surrounding yourself with George Eliot or Dostoevsky or Tolstoy and living with those characters for 900 pages, dense pages, they take you a month and a half to read if you're being diligent, and you come away just enriched by it. That's a great
comparison, in that it is that people are able to invest in the characters and they love the characters and they're able to join with them and stay with them over an extended period of time and really live through them in a way.
And I think the movies are struggling now to be able to tell stories about human stories that are dramatic or comedic. that work, and you know, you can see that they're struggling. It's difficult, and the studios don't want to do that because their real money is their safer bets are in sequels, or in, you know, or in products that are basically tied in with toys or games, and that's them. That's reality. I'm not objecting to it. It's a change in storytelling.
Movies always existed, but what's happened for me, what I've noticed is that before they've let go of all the personnel who had the ability to make the secondary films, the smaller films, and not the tiny films, but just the people who could have had the understanding to intuit making a solid, good picture, and they just don't put themselves out there anymore.
Those movies don't make any money anymore.
Yeah, well, you know? They make movies, but they'd have to be much, much smaller. I mean, the indie market, people will, you know, people making very, very small, much smaller scale films.
I loved Margin Call. Margin Call
I thought it was great. Yeah.
And, you know, he wrote a script was so great he was able to pull together one of the greatest ensemble casts in ever, and he shot it. I heard he's 17 days for $3 million, and then released it in 50 theaters, and at the same time put it on video on demand, and they made money. But as I heard him talking, he said it makes him nervous because the way they distributed and made their money is a way that sort of kills the theater. You know, when people realize they can go home, they can watch it on TV for $8 instead of going to the theater and spending $50, you know, for two people by the time the night is done.
People have a 60, you know, for not that much money, really, they can have a 45 or a 60-inch screen and watch something very well at home. And better than the way that I used to watch all the classic films in school. And,
yep.
You know, most people saw Citizen Kane under worse circumstances.
Yeah.
People watch everything at home now. So
I saw Mission Impossible at IMAX, which was, you know, it's amazing, but the trailer for the last Batman was just. I understand why people who went to paid the money for the seat just to see the trailer and then walked out because they weren't that interested in, you know, they'd already seen Mission Impossible and weren't that interested in it anyway. They just wanted to see that trailer on the big screen.
That's a great trilogy. That trilogy is really you know, the Batman trilogy is something very interesting. I mean, I don't know how the third part is, but it seems like it's going to be great. For my next, I've started working on a character-driven novel a couple years ago called Teardowns, and it's something that's not, I'm relieved because it's not about anything have to do with Hollywood. It is in L.A., but it's not Hollywood people. And I started working on, you know, started writing it, and then I have been thinking of structuring a part of it writing a spec pilot from those characters, but trying to do it and not write the novel, but write the novel, but just do that. And if what you were saying about the 12-part series made me think, well, maybe it's valid to do that. I mean, maybe that's it's an interesting thing to do, to say, okay, I'm going to write the novel, but I'm also going to try and structure the TV part of it as well.
Valid to start it.
Yeah.
Valid to try.
The problem is that once you put anything out there as a spec script, it tends to kill the idea in other forms. I think it's not always that easy.
Uh huh.
But I think that the idea that the long form television, that the series, the 12-part series, I think that's a fascinating. I think there is a golden age of television, there have been several golden ages in film. Well, there'll probably be another one pretty soon, but it's not right now for the most part. Okay, well, let's see. Michael, thank you very much for speaking with me today. This has been fascinating.
Well, this has been good. Thank you. Good luck with your book.
Okay, thank you very much, and good luck with your script and with your book.
Good, thanks a lot.
Okay, take care.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
One is the loneliest number.